I will call the remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is March 9th, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
Looks like Josh is not on yet, so I'll take the roll, I guess.
Okay, Chair, thank you.
Chair Mason.
Mason, present.
Vice Chair Elkins.
Present.
Lead Quam.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
Okay. All members are here.
Thank you so much. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. Representative Quam, have you read the minutes?
I would so move.
Thank you. Is there any discussion or corrections? And if everybody would unmute, all those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Those, any objections, say nay. The minutes stand approved. Thank you. The first item that we have today is House File 3285. This bill was referred to this division by the chair of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And members, I'm hoping that we can be voting on this bill by 9 o'clock. I will move House File 3285 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. Representative Stansted, do you want us to move the bill, amendment first?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. The amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Stansted, to your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning and good morning, members. I'm here to present House File 3285. This is a bill that would allow counties to advertise, sell, lease, or convey county-owned property on a county website and allow them to solicit and accept bids through an online auction process. This is a bill that I've been developing along with St. Louis County to help bring the process into a 21st century process. The bill also requires counties to advertise bids or proposals on the county website in addition to traditional notices in the newspaper. Additionally, the bill clarifies that proposals, in addition to leases, less than $15,000 for any single year can be negotiated and aren't subject to the competitive bid process under this law. Madam Chair, it's 2022 and we all conduct business online, yes, even in government. And St. Louis County, a county that has conducted other sales online, included tax forfeited property auctions online and they've had a much greater return in doing so. In addition to benefiting the counties, it will also increase convenience for members of the public who won't need to take time off of work to participate in an auction. And today with me, I have Director of Lands and Minerals from St. Louis County, Julie Marinucci.
Okay, and if your testifier would identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Julie Marinucci. I am the Director of Lands and Minerals for St. Louis County and also the Land Commissioner. And I appreciate your time today to speak to this bill. St. Louis County manages on the tax forfeited side just under 1 million acres of land. And over the last couple of years, we transitioned our land sale program to leveraging online land sale platforms. And we have had significant success. Representative Sansi mentioned a couple of them. You know, Our ability to attract bidders from across the country has increased significantly. Our sales on land sale going online has significantly increased. We sold over $4 million of property on the tax forfeited land sale things last year. Now, in this past year, due to retirement, our department has now taken over the county fee portion, which is what this would cover. And it allows us to leverage the successes that we've seen on our land management for the tax forfeited trust. It allows us now to move the county fee land sales into those same type of platforms. So the changes that have been outlined would allow us to use, presently we use the public surplus website for the actual bidding, but the notification, the use of the county website for putting these materials out there would continue to be the same. And I stand for any questions and really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you for being with us. Are there any questions from members? Representative Meekland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question to the author of the bill or perhaps her testifier. For those that don't have good access to internet, or I have constituents that don't do internet at all, is there an option for them to submit a bid or participate at the, you know, somewhere live at the auction while the bids are coming in?
Madam Chair,
Madam Chair.
So that was definitely a concern when we made the switch, and timing was fortuitous when we moved to online land sales for the tax forfeited trust. We happened to get it in place right before COVID really hit, and we were worried that we would have a lot of feedback that people didn't have the ability to bid online. Surprisingly, we have had no complaints or concerns about people not being able to bid. Once the online auction closes, these properties are available to be purchased over the counter, and we would extend that same process. But we would work with folks to try and make sure that they know where they may be able to find internet access and be able to put in bids. And those bids, you can kind of, just like any other online auction, you can set sort of your max limit and it will automatically bid for you. So there are mechanisms in place that will help with those situations where the internet might be a hindrance to their ability to participate in the auction.
Any response, Representative Meekland?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. That's sufficient.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question regarding the online sales portion. We've had a number of individuals in my area who have purchased these tax forfeited properties. They paid a $100 bill to the county. They got them. They're in really rough shape, and they took some pictures of it, and they threw it online. And one individual, I think he sold a property that he bought for $100. He sold it for $15,000 to someone from California. The person shows up and they realize that what they had purchased was nowhere near what they thought they had purchased. Is there some manner of recourse? What happens if I was online, I was looking at your pictures, and what I saw was not what you had posted on there or something? You know, when you walk into a house, you know if that tax forfeit property is worth it or not. Is there some manner of recourse that you can go through if, in fact, it was not what was represented?
Ms. Marinucci.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. You know, with the county fee sales, these are primarily going to be rural lands that we are unloading that maybe were secured at one time for a gravel pit that has been spent, or it was some piece of property that was secured for some other utility type work or use. On the tax forfeited land sales, absolutely, it is difficult to truly convey the condition of some of those properties, specifically when you get into structures. And, you know, we really work hard to disclose as much information as we can and be as transparent as possible in ensuring that people understand what they are buying. We work to direct them to the local municipalities or zoning agents so that they know what can or can't be done with these properties. And so all of that information is provided, and we really encourage people to do their due diligence and not, you know, pick it up based off of the picture in the right lighting that shows a piece of property that they might think is a gem that maybe is not. So, I mean, that's the work that we do on the front end to make sure that, you know, we're not creating a situation where someone feels like they've been taken by their bidding on property.
Response, Representative Olson.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. That was a sufficient answer. You know, I'm a huge proponent of regular private citizens doing their own due diligence when regarding business ventures. So thank you.
Okay, Representative Quam.
Here, and I have concerns in that it was mentioned by the testifier, well, we haven't gotten complaints. Part of my concerns is if you don't know about it, then, you know, and you missed it, then you're not going to get a complaint. And the notification and accessibility from that, I think I'd like to see, you know, make sure that the current law notification and getting the word out in non-online fashion is present. I'd also like to see, especially in the rural areas, that the neighboring property owners and the people in that area, I personally think they should be notified and aware, because, you know, one, they're residents, citizens, and et cetera. It can directly impact them, and they ought to at least know and have the opportunity to participate in that auction. So I like the idea of having, it's online, but we have this room in the government center where you can come in and do the in-person, you know, bidding and et cetera. So I know a lot of rural people have spotty internet, and they might just be used to doing it in person. So I think online is great, but I think you need to have that option available. So information and notifying, the idea of unintended things being present when you buy online, you know, it could be a super, you know, somebody could have been dumping old cars and other stuff on that property. It, you know, maybe it's a few acres. It'd be nice in general to improve the sale of tax forfeited properties by having some sort of component in the bill about if we discover that the site had barrels of chemicals buried in it, you know, some sort of a clause, a Superfund clause that would somewhat limit the exposure. You know, because once again, it's forfeited, it goes to the county or whatever government entity. It behooves them to make sure that they know what bad things might be there, and have that informational. So it's not just on the online thing. When anytime you touch a code or a government process, you should look at how can we make it better, and how can we improve it. Not just this little change, but you're opening up a you know, a package or a recipe or something, and you have one intent. But as a legislator, it's always good to, how else can we improve it since we're opening up this piece of statute? So I like the intent. I just have a little bit of ill at ease on the notification, any clauses, plus how could we do it, improve other areas besides just putting it online? And I may have discussions with the author offline, you know, about this, but it's our opportunity to make multiple improvements if we can to this part of code. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Representative Sandstead, do you want to take that?
Yes, just I will. Representative Kwan, thank you for those comments. I do want to just point out again that what this bill is doing is opening it up to the online process, but not undoing the process that's already currently in place, which includes notification in the newspaper for 3 weeks. So we're not taking that away. We're going to an additional platform in terms of advertising and ability to lead or put in a bid. And then on your other point in terms of, okay, so we're opening up the code and how can we, you know, improve that? Absolutely, I would be happy to talk with you offline.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Marinucci, did you want to make a response?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kwan. The one clarification I would like to make in addition to what Representative Sandstedt had responded to would be the fact that I used the tax forfeited land trust as an example, but to be clear that this is the change in the statute is applicable only to the county fee. So it is actually county owned lands that we would be selling. So from the standpoint that we have a lot better understanding of that property history, it's not like the tax forfeited trust where we get what we get and we have to try and figure and piece together the history on those lands. This is land that we have held for a period of time. It was purchased specifically for a road project or something, and now there's remnant pieces that can be returned back to private ownership. So I guess I just wanted to make that one point that, you know, it's the tax forfeited trust definitely brings certain conditions on properties that are problematic and difficult and that the counties do spend a lot of time managing. But with this statute governing the county fee, the county owned lands, that risk is quite a bit lower in the fact that we're going to discover something that was not known to us when we put it up for sale.
Representative Kwan, any response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And part of the question about the notification was I wanted the public that might be listening to have that information because it wasn't as broadly touched on before. This is going to be globally for all counties, but would this open up processes to cities? Yeah, I'll wait for the answer. And that was the last thing I wanted to make sure that it was clear. It would allow all counties to go through this process. And then two, what would prevent cities from duplicating what we set forth here?
Who would like to take that?
Madam Chair, do we have research available that could answer that? I'm not sure on that answer.
Madam Chair, this is Chelsea Griffin from House Research.
Ms. Griffin, please.
Great. Thank you. House File 3285 is amending a statute that's specific to counties. For cities, I'm not sure offhand what statutes would need to be amended, but if you're interested in looking for a bill, Representative Kwan, I would be happy to work with you on getting one drafted.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion on the bill? I'm not seeing any hands. So in that case, I will move House File, or renew my motion, that House File 3285, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And Representative Stansett, I forgot to give you a chance to say your last words. Please go ahead and then I'll finish.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate you hearing this bill. I think this is just a very straightforward bill in helping modernize the process that St. Louis County and other counties would be able to use. And I'd appreciate your support on this.
Thank you. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
Will do. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Kwan.
Yes.
Representative Byrd.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes.
Thank you. So the motion prevails. Representative Sanstead, you're on your way. And thank you again. Have a good day. And next, we're moving to House File 3588. And this bill, too, was referred to this division by the chair of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. I'd like to be voting on this bill by 9:30. And I will move that House File 3588 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And Representative Vang has an author's amendment. Do you want me to do that amendment first? Representative Vang?
Yes, please, okay. Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author wants. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Okay, the amendment is passed. And to your bill, Representative Vang, as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 3588 is meant to be another tool in the toolbox to address how we can build more affordable housing. One, it is easy to understand and use as well to bring significant additional private capital into the financing of much needed newly constructed affordable housing. It does not require any state funding. The program is completely discretionary for a city to use or not use on a project by project basis and has a term of 10 to 20 years. It is not debt-like tax increment financing and therefore would not impact the city's statutory debt limits. The program reduces the market rate assets valued for a newly constructed building by 50%, and the corresponding 50% reduction in the real estate taxes offsets the difference in rents between market rate and 60% AMI. 50% of the newly created real estate taxes will still flow to cities, counties, and school districts, unlike TIF, and it meets the but-for requirements as these new buildings will not be built without this program. It is not applicable to any existing property and cannot be used in conjunction with any other subsidy programs such as 4D. It will significantly broaden the number of developers and investors that will be willing to develop and invest in affordable housing and thus greatly increase the number of affordable housing units. It requires an annual compliance certification by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And with that, Madam Chair, I will yield the rest of my time to my testifier who can give more context for this bill.
Mr. Duran, if you would identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kelly Dorn. Thank you for allowing me to testify before the committee, and thank you, Representative Vang, for authoring the bill. As I said, my name is Kelly Dorn. I'm a real estate developer. I've been involved in the business for 40 years. I have developed and built many millions of square feet of commercial property in the state of Minnesota and worth billions of dollars. I currently focus on multifamily, and we have built many thousands of units of multifamily in Minnesota and elsewhere. I'm not here to represent any group, and I'm not a lobbyist. I'm here to represent an idea, and the idea is how to increase the amount of available capital that will allow our society to meet the growing demand for affordable housing and do it in a way that exercises and brings in that private capital to supplement limited government resources. And it's time that we start actually providing these resources so that we can meet these goals rather than just talking about it. There's simply not enough government funding at any level to meet the availability or demand for more affordable housing. You can fund more tax credits, you can fund more TIF, you can create more grants, but it just will not totally solve the problem. We need to extend the resources by bringing in private capital into the market and to make the process simpler. The problem is the process today to finance affordable housing is just too complicated and too costly to participate. And that's why only a small percentage of real estate developers participate in the funding and construction of affordable housing. And I estimate that it's probably less than 10% of the developers today participate in the development of affordable housing. Why is that? Because again, it's just too complicated. It takes many attorneys, consultants, lobbyists. It has significant additional property management requirements once the project is built. If a developer wants to include, say, 20% of a project units as affordable, there's limited resources for that. The primary purpose or primary use of that is probably through a city issuing TIF, either a pay-as-go note or perhaps a bond, more likely a pay-as-you-go note. The gap in constructing affordable housing from a market rate unit to somebody who at 60% AMI from a funding standpoint ranges between $150,000 and $200,000 per unit. And the primary tool that's currently available to do that is TIF. Typically in these kind of mixed buildings, these buildings don't end up qualifying for tax credits or grants, because those limited resources are more typically geared towards other projects that have more deeply affordable housing or other community goals. And so that's the purpose of this bill. And we call it the Affordable Housing Market Value Exclusion. And it's very simple. As Representative Vang elaborated, it's very simple to use. It's very simple to understand. Basically what it does is that a city assessor or any assessor that's involved values the building upon completion at market rate, as if every unit was a market rate apartment. And then simply that value that's established by the city assessor is cut in half. And the savings that result from that, from the taxes basically being cut in half as well, will result in allowing the property owner to retain that from its operating expenses and to use that money to offset the difference in rents between a 60% AMI renter and a market rate renter. And the math works, and we've run many models on this. This is not a cure-all, however, for every problem. It's not going to solve every issue. It's not going to solve every component. It's an added tool, as Representative Vang said. The purpose of it is it's very discretionary. The city can elect to use this or not use it, and they can elect to use it on one project or not use it on another project. And so the city retains control of it, and the math is simple. You can test it. You can determine what the taxes likely will be generated by competitive properties in the area, and you can determine if the math works in terms of offsetting the rent differential to make that policy decision as to whether to use the tool or not. It requires zero state funding, and it is monitored based on an annual certification made to the Minnesota Housing Finance Board. This, in my opinion, I've been doing this a long, long time. This, in my opinion, will take people like me as a developer who I do not build affordable housing and turn us into affordable housing developers. It is easy for us to understand. It is easy for an investor to understand. It's easy for a local policymaker to understand. And that ease and that ease of use will allow this to become a catalyst for the construction of many thousands of new housing units. Most of these housing units would never get built absent a program like this, because there simply isn't enough TIF or other financial tools available to create this level of housing. This housing is revenue neutral from a developer's perspective, and so there's really no reason not to ask to participate in this. And it will create significant additional housing. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll open myself up to any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you. You had used TIF and AMI, and I'm going to suggest that it might be helpful to identify both of those.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I use the word TIF as an acronym for tax increment financing. AMI is a benchmark for determining, it stands for adjusted median income, and there's different AMIs across the state depending upon the local income levels, and that's a benchmark to gauge affordability. And there are different levels of AMI. There are 30% AMI, 50% AMI, 60% AMI, and 80% AMI.
Thank you very much. We have at least one other testifier, so I'd like to hear the testifiers before we take questions. Mr. Kropinski?
Good morning.
I didn't say that right. I apologize. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Mark Krupski. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Vang. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning. I am the Olmsted County Director of Property Records and Licensing. We oversee the property tax system. I'm also a member of the MAAO Legislative Committee. Olmsted County proactively supports affordable housing and has implemented its own 4D program in partnership with the City of Rochester. It accepts property owners who are willing to cap rental prices at 6% annually. We accept payment vouchers, and we have a minimum enrollment period of 10 years. In essence, it is close to what being offered with House File 3588. In consultation with the Olmsted County HRA Director, Dave Dunn, we feel that there is not a need to offer another tool that duplicates what is already available. Existing 4D statute and proposed House File 3588 both use 60% of the area medium income. Currently, 4D reduces that portion of the building's classification rate from 1.25% to 0.75, which is about a 40% reduction in the property tax. House File 3588 excludes 50% of the market value from the property taxes. Arguably, the exclusion may provide a slightly greater benefit, but is it significant enough to warrant another program that creates a property tax exemption that shifts property taxes to other property owners and further complicates an already complicated property tax system? House File 3588 does not provide for county input, yet requires that they administer the program, which will add costs to program for their software. House File 3588 does not align with the Minnesota Association of Assessing Offices position statement. Points that don't align. MAAO believes that adjustments to market values, such as limitations on assessors' estimated market values, acquisition values, deferment, exclusion, or exemptions, create inequities among taxpayers. MAAO supports good tax policy that treats all taxpayers in a consistent manner. MAAO opposes classifications or programs that target only a small number of taxpayers. The most recent Minnesota Department of Revenue 4D report indicates that 4D housing units rose 5% from 2020 to 2021, and that has risen over 34% in the past 10 years. This seems to indicate that 4D is providing a substantial affordable housing benefit and continues to expand. Properties enrolled in 4D receive a 40% reduction in their property taxes. I conclude that stating that Olmsted County considers affordable housing a priority, and we believe that the existing 4D program provides a substantial affordable benefit without further complicating the property tax system. And I just thank you for the opportunity to speak on this matter today.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this before we go to questions? Okay, I am not seeing anyone. So members, are there any questions at this point? Okay. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a quick question. I don't know if it'd be for the testifier, the representative, or council. So I'll just throw it out there. Very familiar with the 4D property as the property tax division chair. And I know, I believe this bill will eventually make its way over to taxes. With the 4D property, if I'm not mistaken, the lower classification rate is applied only to the units that are affordable. This seems to be an exclusion of 50% of the property value for the entire building, not just the properties that fit the 60% AMI. Am I correct in that?
Who would like to take that?
Madam Chair, I can try to answer that.
Proceed.
My understanding of 4D, it's predominantly focused on existing real estate and keeping that real estate, those units affordable. This program is focused on newly constructed real estate. is not applicable to any existing real estate, cannot be used for any existing real estate or remodeling of any existing real estate. It is newly constructed and will create the volume of units that are needed to help solve this problem that, although 4D contributes mightily towards that, it's simply not enough. And I don't really think that this is actually that much more complicated. It's actually a very simple, straightforward system.
Madam Chair,
thank you, Madam Chair. That didn't exactly answer my question, so I'll go to Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Swanson.
Madam Chair and Representative Joachim, Jared Swanson with House Research. Representative Joachim, your description was correct. So the 4D classification applies only to the units that are meet the affordability requirements. This exclusion would apply that 50% market value exclusion to the entire property.
Thank you. Representative Joachim.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make sure I understood that reading the bill. Very familiar with 4D property, and it is also used with new construction. In fact, there's a big push to lower that first tier down to 0.75 for all property, not just the property that's valued at 100,000. As a compromise last year, we dropped that first tier back to 100,000 with the inflator that had been on it. It had gotten up to about 174,000. It was becoming prohibitive for developers to actually use it to develop property. So we're still in discussions on that, just had a report back. As Mr. Krupski, and I am so sorry, I probably pronounced that wrong, said it is a tax and tax rate that's used throughout our state, and we're still trying to figure out how to amplify it. I understand this makes a lot, it's a lot easier to understand than TIF. We all know that tax increment financing can be very complicated, and it kind of falls along that line a little bit more, and maybe along the line of an abatement, and was wondering if we'd heard from the counties being concerned that 50% of the property would be off the tax rolls. One of the things we've also been talking about with the 4D property, and maybe Mr. Doran and I can talk about this offline, is how is that getting that tax benefit and making sure that the property stays affordable for the amount of tax benefit that's going into it is something that I'd be a little bit concerned about. But thank you for bringing a very creative bill forward, and anything we can do to get some tools in the toolbox or CDs to help with affordable housing would be a good idea. And I want to thank Mr. Doran for working with the cities. I know we have some letters in our packet saying that he has been, and I suggest people read those as well. There's still some hesitancy around it. So we'll work its way through the process.
Thank you very much. And again, I just wanted to emphasize what Representative Joachim said. If you go to the local government division website, our agenda and all the written testimony is there for you to read as well. And next, I see Representative Kwam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as was touched upon, this affects more than just the city. There's a county. It wasn't brought up, the effect on school districts. It was one of the testifiers mentioned, well, and the state isn't costing the state anything. Well, I know when we've made adjustments to property tax, I think it was when the ag was changed, there were some adjustments of where the state contributed a portion of, and I think that was on a school levy or bond issue. And I understand the intent. My concern is, the effect on schools and, that there doesn't appear to be anything to look at the schools and then, doing something with counties in order to take care of the effects upon them. So I think it's not quite there yet in its current form. And there are some issues that need to be addressed. And, I guess that Maybe the author could explain how they're planning to rectify the impact on counties and schools might be nice.
Representative Van.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, as there will be a couple more committee stops, and it is my intent to continue to engage with various stakeholders. I know that a couple has reached out to me to express some concerns, and it's my intent to continue to work with them and see how we can continue to improve this bill. That is the purpose of this committee process, is continue to fine-tune the bill to make sure that it meets the needs of all stakeholders.
Madam Chair, could I add to that?
Oh, Mr. Dory.
Yeah, I would like to just add to that that the assumption here is that a developer comes into a community with a proposed project that contains 20% of the units at 60% AMI. I am not aware of any significant use of 4D for any significantly sized projects that I'm aware of as a resource to make that project work. What this project does, currently the opportunity for that type of project to get built to fund the gap in cost, the primary resource is TIF. Under TIF, all of the taxes would go towards the payment of the pay-as-you-go note that's issued to the developer to cover the gap in financing. So school districts and counties do not participate in that process. In this process, only half of the taxes being generated will go towards offsetting the rent differential. So the other half will continue to flow to cities, counties, and school districts, and thus the present value of this from a revenue stream standpoint is much greater than TIF over the life of a typical pay-as-you-go TIF note, which is 15 to 20 years. And so there actually is a benefit. And in terms of a transfer of this or an offset to this, again, the assumption here is that these buildings don't get built without this program. And so the revenue that is generated at 50% is 50% more than would be there because these buildings wouldn't be there. And so I'm not sure that there is the transfer issue. I'm not sure that cities and counties don't benefit from this. And it does go towards creating a significant additional affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will take Mr. Krupski next. And I'm thinking here, that name was used in a song many years ago, wasn't there?
That was my uncle, Officer Krupke.
Was that a
story?
If you'll proceed, so, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to respond that in the city of Rochester, we had an affordable housing champion who just recently passed away. His name was Joseph Weiss, Weiss Construction. He was close to 90. And he built several, and I mean several properties that were 4D in Homestead County and in the city, mainly in the city of Rochester. So to Mr. Doran's point, I would say that that's not the case in Rochester. And the difference between 4D and this is that the 4D units, only the units that are in the program that are providing the benefit receive the reduced classification rate. Versus in this one, only 20% of the building has to. And we are not on apartments in Rochester. We've had, apartments have been the most resilient property type over the last, ever since, you know, last 20 years. I've been doing this for 32 years. And by going with this route, you're only really adding 20% of this improvement is going to receive the benefit. Whereas with a 4D property, whatever. If 100% of the building's in 4D, then 100% of the building gets the benefit. So I think there's a more direct relationship with 4D versus this legislation. And again, thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to share once again.
Thank you. And Representative Quam, I think these were in response to your question. Any further comments?
Yes, Madam Chair. One of the testifiers seemed to indicate that, nothing would happen to the property if they didn't allow this. And frankly, a lot, you know, one part of the state, maybe that's true. I can confirm along, you know, I'm sure the Olmsted County testifier could confirm that there is, if we aren't building on, you know, that project on that land, something else is going to be built. And so it's not what we're doing down here is trying to incentivize having the affordable housing built, but you know, construction and expansion. The city I'm living in now grew 28% in the last census. So this rule isn't just going to be in effect for a city, a county, et cetera. This is statewide. Plus, this committee is about local government. So waiting for the addressing of counties, you know, the property tax part of in the impacts to schools and the citizens and you know, our counties, I think this is a committee where we should have been able to discuss the impacts of this on other entities of local government. This is, you know, I hope that, I guess I can trust the author will be taking care of that issue, but I really wish that we could have addressed it in this local government, you know, committee. Too oftentimes, we let a, ooh, it's shiny, a wonderful idea, great intent, and we don't address all of the unintended or the ripple effects. And I think that's what a lot of the discussion and the ill at ease has been, not on the intent, but have we appropriately addressed the possibility? Have we fleshed out the bill so that we don't have to worry about some impact? And, you know, plus always remembering communities differ, counties differ, and we really have to make sure that what's great for one part of the state maybe is not causing an issue in another part. So with that, I will eagerly await further discussion on this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Elkins, you're next, and then Representative Meekland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a lot of the questions I had are at least been raised, just as a general rule in terms of a tool for local government. I'm always strongly supportive of incentives to create mixed income housing. I think that it results in better integrated communities and avoids the possibility of creating future concentrated areas of property. This approach, as it's already been testified, does seem to have a substantial overlap in terms of its effects, if not the exact mechanism with the 4D program. I think that when the bill gets to Chair Joachim's committee, I think that those kinds of issues will be much greater explored. But again, it's already been noted that the credit would apply to the entire building, not just the affordable units. And the builder only has to make a good faith effort to make sure that 20% of the units are actually rented by people who meet the income levels. That it's not even a guarantee, and here the way I'm reading the bill, that all of those units would actually be occupied by people who meet those income requirements. So I'm inclined to vote for the bill to move it along to further the discussion, but I do think that it's a bit broad brush right now.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Meekland.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if this will be Representative Vang or Mr. Duran, but for this 20%, there's an income requirement upon entrance into the building. Is there something that verifies that income stays at that level on an annual basis in the event they became prosperous or, you know, something changed in their income levels? I mean, or once they're in, that's guaranteed for the next 10 or 20 years.
Mr. Duran, did you want to respond?
I'll be happy to. Madam Chair, it does, the bill does provide for that the 60% AMI must be met at initial leasing. The annual certification does require that there be an attempt made to keep it at that level, but yet we also want to balance the prospect of allowing people's incomes to grow. But keep in mind that the affordable units within these buildings are not restricted to particular units. They're restricted to 20% of the units. So there could be other people that could come into the building that would substitute in as the affordable aspect if someone's income does grow. I don't think limiting somebody's income is the way we want to go either. I think we want to encourage that growth of income and to move forward. And the annual certification to the Minnesota Housing Authority, Finance Authority would be required to show that on an overall basis.
Representative Meeklin, any response?
No, I think that answered it for me. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions from members? Representative Joachim.
Thank you. That just brought up another question I think is probably better for this committee maybe than property to our taxes. But if, you know, you when you recertify, let's say you have that 20% that has to be at the affordable 60% AMI, and what happens if you don't have any tenants that are applying to come in because the 60% AMI might still be out of reach for some folks? Do those 20 units then stay empty, or are you able to rent them out to people that are above that income? I'm not sure. I know that the requalification every year is in the bill, but I wasn't sure how that would work if then you just end up having 20% of your units empty, and what's the average amount of empty units that are in a development? I'm sorry, I'm showing my ignorance on this. Thank you.
Would like to take that.
I'll be happy to answer that, Madam Chair.
Mr. Durant.
The bill provides that the, let me back up. The practical experience right now with almost every affordable housing unit at every affordable housing level is there's a waiting list for them. And so something would dramatically have to change for that to be different. And that would, I guess that would be ultimately a good thing if that did change. But so I doubt these units would stay empty very long. And the units with are any unit within the building. So there's no discrimination on terms of building a particular unit or a particular way. It has to be any unit in the building, and those units can move around as people's incomes grow or not grow, or the need changes. Maybe one year you might need more two bedrooms than one bedrooms. It just depends on what's available. And so the I think the language in with the amendment that we worked with the League of Cities is clear that the units have to be made available and stay available for those, and you cannot substitute in a market rate apartment into one of those units.
Thank you, Representative Joachim.
No, thank you.
Okay. Members, are there any more questions or discussion on the bill? Okay, not seeing any hands. Representative Ang, would you like to make some closing remarks?
Just want to say thank you, Madam Chair, for considering this bill, and I appreciate the engaged discussion on this, and I will work to address some of the concerns made and as we move through this committee process. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 3588 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee as amended. And if the clerk would take the roll, please.
Representative Mason?
Mason, aye.
Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Burke?
Aye.
Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Meeklin?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Joachim?
Aye.
We have 6 ayes and 3 nays.
The motion prevails. Representative Ang, you're on your way. Thank you so much. And next, we are moving to House File 3832, 34. And this bill, too, was referred to the division by the chair of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And I'd like to take the vote by 9:55, please. Representative Elkins, would you like to move your bill, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. We'll move that House file. Caught me flat-footed. What's the bill number?
Okay. House file 3834.
3834 be moved to the, re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
Exactly. Sorry. And so to your bill, please.
Thank you. So as described in the House research bill summary, Bloomington and South St. Paul were some of the first cities in the states to have housing and redevelopment authorities. And so the original authority to create these was placed in session law way back in 1971. Those statutes were updated in 1977. And then in 1987, the laws governing housing and redevelopment authorities more generally were updated and recodified into a new section of law. But that the session law from 71 and 77 is still out there. And so the City of Bloomington would basically like to just clean up that old session law, make it crystal clear that Bloomington and South St. Paul are just governed by the general statute that governs all HRAs statewide. So this is basically a kind of an administrative cleanup. And we have reached out through Representative Rick Hansen and direct HRA to HRA contacts to make sure that there's nothing about this that the City of South St. Paul would be disadvantaged by. We haven't gotten back to them yet, but if they do find some reason why they wouldn't participate in this, we would offer an amendment to remove them from this bill when the bill gets to State Government Finance.
Okay, thank you. And I'm not seeing any testifiers for this bill. So members, are there any questions or discussion on this bill? This may be your lucky day.
This is a pretty simple administrative cleanup, Madam Chair. So I'll renew my motion that we refer this bill to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections.
Okay. Thank you so much. And if Josh will take the roll, please.
Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Plum. Representative Plum.
Aye.
Representative Byrd.
Aye.
Representative Bolden. Representative Bolden. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
Representative Bolden. We have eight
Bolden, aye.
Nine ayes.
Would you repeat that, please?
We have nine ayes.
Okay, thank you very much. So the motion prevails, and Representative Elkins, you're on your way with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You are welcome. Before we adjourn, do members have any comments or discussion? Not seeing any, we stand adjourned. Have a good day.